Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who, me? I'm not a witch at all. I'm Dorothy Gale from Kansas.
Witches. What comes to mind is most likely what we've seen in popular culture. Maybe it's Hocus Pocus, Bewitched, The Wizard of Oz, or Three Hags reciting.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Fire, burn, and cauldron, bubble.
You may think of ugly women with warts and pointed hats, dressed in black and riding broomsticks. Or perhaps you may think about the Salem witch hunts and trials, a dark time in our history where 172 people were charged and 23 wrongfully killed for the suspected practice of witchcraft. What does the word witch mean? What does it mean today, and what does it mean to practice witchcraft? I'm Dori Robinson, and this is Tree Speech. In this episode, our first of two, where we will focus on the tricks and treats of the season, we're going to explore the world of witchcraft. We will speak with two modern-day witches, Serafina Meza and Joshua Gray, who explain their craft, including green witchcraft, which is deeply connected to the earth and embraces nature, herbs, and plants, and the role trees play in it all. But first, a little history of Halloween to put things in context. What began as a harvest feast has evolved over the centuries into the phenomena it is today, while still retaining the roots of its beginnings, including many traditions that often incorporate plants in symbolic ways. The festival of Samhain was the most significant holiday of the Celtic year, beginning on the eve of October 31st and continuing through November 1st. Occurring about halfway between the autumnal equinox and the winter solstice, it was an agricultural marker, a sign that summer and the harvest had ended, a symbolic completion of one cycle and the beginning of another, believed to be a liminal time during which the souls of those who had died during the recent year traveled into the other world. It is also believed that during this time, the ghosts of the long dead were able to mingle with the living. Bonfires were lit to assist the dead on their journey, and food and drink were offered to them. While there were ancestral spirits who were welcomed, there were also dark demons, ghouls, and ghosts who they believed they needed to ward off, often with woody plants, including rowan, elderberry, and hazelnut. The ancient Celts believed that rowan berries magically gave good health, and that rowan trees planted near gravesites would help the dead sleep. In old Europe, elderberry branches held above doorways were thought to protect homes from malevolent spirits and witches. Hazelnut trees and their nuts were thought to hold equally potent powers on Halloween night. Strands of nuts worn or kept in the home would bring good luck. Samhain became the Halloween we are familiar with when Christian missionaries attempted to change the religious practices of the Celtic people. In 601 AD, rather than try to obliterate native people's customs and beliefs, the Pope instructed his missionaries to use them. If a group of people worshipped a tree, rather than cut it down, he advised them to consecrate it to Jesus and allow its continued worship. Church holy days were purposely set to coincide with native holy days to diminish but not totally eradicate the beliefs of the traditional gods. Celtic belief in supernatural creatures persisted, while the church made deliberate attempts to define them as being not merely dangerous, but malicious. Followers of the old religion went into hiding and were branded as witches. Over time, All Saints' Day, or All Hallows, meaning sanctified or holy, morphed with Samhain, and October 31st became Halloween. Many beliefs and customs lived on, simply in different costumes. Speaking of costumes, the tradition of dressing up stemmed from the Celtic period when it was believed that the souls of the dead roamed the night and food and drinks were left out to placate them. Soon enough, people went door to door dressed as the anticipated spirits, including witches, demons, and fairies, demanding treats in exchange for performing antics, a practice called mumming, which eventually evolved into trick-or-treating. With that, let's begin. I spoke with Serafina, owner of Rue and Vervain, an Etsy shop that sells handmade spell crafting supplies for the persnickety witch. Serafina is a self-described bodhisattva, green witch, and empath who believes that there's primordial energy and magic in nature, and through her gifts, that power can be harnessed and shared. During our conversation, Serafina was seated in a quiet room surrounded by books. Behind her, I could see a small altar with various items, including stones and candles. Dried herbs delicately hung along the wall. Her warm energy came straight through the screen. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's so special to have you.
Thank you.
What does your practice look like? And take us through maybe some specifics.
I typically get up between 3 and 4, still dark. I like to immediately, if it's cold, like right now it's starting to get cold, so I'll wrap myself in a blanket and I start my little fire outside and I earth. I try to earth for about 3 hours a day, bare feet to the ground. I have an autoimmune disease, and honestly, I have found that to be one of the greatest contributors to my recovery and some of the issues that I've had with my body over the last several years. And I even have an earthing mat that I keep inside to keep connected in the winters, because you know, winters here on the East can get very cold and snowy. After a while earthing, I have this gorgeous white oak tree that's in my yard. She's the most beautiful tree. I'm so connected to her. And I like to meditate facing her right underneath her branches. I also do tarot while I'm sitting there. I planted 2 juniper trees in front of my house for protection. In Buddhism, they call it attracting the dralas. Dralas would be like positive energy. And then in witchcraft, it's kind of the same thing. In a lot of pagan beliefs, the juniper was highly protective, and it actually protects you from thieves and theft. And when we moved into this neighborhood, my partner and I, I'm Latina and he's Black, and it's kind of a very homogenous neighborhood. And we had rocks thrown at our house several times, broke all the windows in this gorgeous 100-year-old house that we bought. And after the second time, I was just like heartbroken and angry. I meditated on it and the juniper called to me. And I planted those 2 juniper bushes on each side of my door. And we've been here for 6 years and it's never happened again. Herbs I use medically, but I also use them traditionally in the way that a lot of they're practiced in folklore. I don't think there's any difference between almost their herbal and their healing. Juniper is one of those things. It's probably the herb that I've called the most to, along with eucalyptus, both very highly protective. I start my mornings, I bless my house, all my doorways and my windows and my stairs, I bless them. So I burn some sweetgrass and I bless all the openings in my house. So I typically start my workday about noon and then work to the evening. Before, when I had a traditional 9-to-5, I jumped out of bed and rushed into my life before, and I was in my desk chair before I even know how I got there half the time, you know. Just discombobulated and fueled on nothing but coffee. And now I get up so much earlier naturally. I focus a lot on my spirituality first. And I find that fuels me to accomplish most of the other stuff in my day. And I also incorporate a lot of my magic, my craft into just daily stuff. And when I clean my house, I add lavender and lemongrass to my mop, my water, my cleanse. I make my own cleansers and my own soaps and things like that. You know, and again, just the little blessings. I always keep stones and rocks everywhere. Place. I have a little indoor garden and I create a little altar space down there that I like to light candles and incense when I go down there to garden. So it's kind of effortless because there's no difference between just my everyday life and my craft.
I love how you said that, that there's no difference between your everyday life and your craft. And can you tell us a little bit more about what do you think green witchcraft is?
I truly think green witchcraft is very earth-based and herbal. I think most witches are drawn to that green witchcraft for healing, whether it's physical or spiritual, emotional healing. I know that's how I kind of came to it. I got very sick. It struck hard and sudden and lost my job. I lost everything in a very short period of time. Nobody could tell me what was wrong. I went to so many doctors. I had a neck injury. I had a car accident many years ago. I had surgery. So I have a titanium brackets in my neck, and suffered for many years of chronic pain. And then all the painkillers and steroids and it was awful. It took me years to get rid of all of that. So when these new symptoms started to come on, all they wanted to do was put me more full of drugs. And I just said I was done. In my stay here in Maryland, medical cannabis had just become legal. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go that route. And that actually probably blew the door open for me, because I was pleasantly surprised and very angry when it worked. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, the government will shove Vicodin down my throat and OxyContin, but this actually makes me feel better. And that made me start going, well, if this herb is so healing, what other herbs don't I know about that are just as healing? And I started on a 2-year stint to just try every medical herbal concoction known to me. And a lot of them did not work, but many had profound healing, like leaps and bounds. I can't tell you how debilitated I was before. I had to walk with a cane. I was in bed for most of my day, every day, just about. It took its toll on my body, my mental health. All these things simultaneously are going on while I'm studying the magical, spiritual aspects of these types of herbs. I'm Latina, but my mom is Italian, and my great-grandmother was a Strega from Italy. Like, she was an old witch that had all those awesome concoctions that she would make. And, you know, what they would say, her beliefs, they called her a white witch, a white medium. She was highly psychic. And I often dream of her. I would have these vivid dreams that were they would come true, like in weird ways. And my great grandmother was like this when I was a child. And I have these vivid memories of her calling at like 3 a.m. because she lived in Florida. We lived in California. She would call us at like 3 a.m. and be like, is so-and-so okay? And we're like, what are you talking about? And it turns out they got into a motorcycle accident and we didn't even know. And like, my aunt was pregnant and my grandmother called and told us she was pregnant before she even knew she was pregnant. And it was things like that. Like, she was just highly gifted in that sense. That really made me want to delve more into the magical aspect of the craft, which honestly, I'm on the fence with the term magical, because I honestly think it's science-based. I think a lot of it, like a lot of the quantum physics study that they do right now, I think just is the scientific universe's way of legally dabbling in magic without it being called so, because that's really what it is. All that energy movement and things like that. I think it crosses spiritually. And so I think what a lot of people would refer to or dismiss as magic, I think, you know what, it's not. I think there's also a lot of scientific basis behind it. I think for what a lot of people may not understand, I think the science just hasn't been discovered yet.
I would love to ask you more about that, because you hit on something so important, that there is such a dismissal of the herbs that one's grandmother makes or the stories of one's aunts. And it's not always women, but often women. So there's sort of this dismissal of, oh, you're going to use this herb from your garden rather than this medicine, science versus earth magic. Can you speak a little bit about why you think there has been this pressure to separate the two, or to make us think that they are separate?
Honestly, I think the problem is twofold. I think, number one, the fact that so many, what they would have referred to as witches, were kept out of the scientific community. If you were, especially, you know, and you're right, it's not always women. A lot, you know, there were a lot of men also accused of witchcraft for what they did, but the majority were women back then. But if you were a healer, you were in direct competition with doctors and they needed to get rid of you. Like, how dare you? You didn't go to school for 8 years and you don't know what I know. You know, they just dismissed your entire, your education, whether that because it wasn't in a classroom setting, is they dismissed it. But, you know, that trial and error, that ancestral knowledge that is passed down, in my opinion, sometimes is worth far more than any education you can get sitting in a seat. So I think that's one reason there was this separation, because for many years, that herbalistic aspect was associated with witchcraft. The second layer is the pharmaceutical industry. They just own everything and they are not going to let some little herb come in and take away their millions and billions. When I found out they were the number one campaign contributor to anti-cannabis campaigns, I was livid. But then I was like, of course, they don't want a very simple herb to be able to heal you when they can concoct all these chemicals and keep you sick. And I don't want to come across anti-Western medicine. I absolutely believe there is a time and a place. And when you dig into the history of these medicines, you find out they're actually just synthetic forms of herbs.
You draw this wonderful parallel of being outside with your bare feet, the fact that the herbs in simplest form are sometimes what's best for you. So let's talk about trees in terms of witchcraft. When we walk about the world, a lot of us don't know the symbolisms of various trees. And you just mentioned juniper. Do trees hold significance in witchcraft? And how would you summarize that?
Oh, so many do. There are a lot of witches who I think would just call themselves tree witches. Like, they believe that they speak to them in a sense spiritually, that they hear messages from them. Trees, I feel like, hold so much wisdom. I think of the tree that's next door. This neighborhood is over 100 years old, and I'm sure that tree was here when the neighborhood was built around it. And to think of everything it has seen and witnessed and been around, and all the knowledge and wisdom that it has held, and they hold so much magic in and of themselves.
So your description for your business, Rue and Verbane, is spell crafting supplies for the persnickety witch. What does that mean to you?
Well, I, you know, in my own journey trying to find witchcraft supplies, it all seems very commercialized. I think magic is more powerful with intention. You could take any object and put your own intention and make it powerful. I spend a lot of time handcrafting all of the things that I make. It takes a little longer, but I think if you're a persnickety witch that really wants that extra potency in your item, that's my little groove. That's my audience, because I do take a lot of time and intention. One little trick that I use when I'm making my herbal concoctions is I whisper into everything that I make. So like, if it's to heal someone, I will whisper with every fiber of my being of love and healing, heal into it over and over to put it in there.
I mean, you have come from this long line of people who are imbuing their work with intention, living their lives with intention, and then you're sharing that with other people, which is really so beautiful. So may I ask, if there is someone who is new to the idea of green witchery, what sort of resources would you recommend to them to learn more about it?
One of my favorite beginning books that I started with, Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Magical Herbs. I love this because it gives you all the different folklore names of an herb. It's different depending on where you come from. The same herb may be called 10 different things. It gives you the traditional uses of herbs along with, you know, actually the healing purposes of them as well. Also, there's actually a couple of books on green witchcraft. Anne Mora, she's a Wiccan, but has amazing information. In my journey, you know, you cross several different paths. I would say a lot of information is probably Wiccan based, but I know a lot of people get intimidated by a religion, you know, and I think a lot of people feel like Wiccan is a religion, and it's like, but don't be afraid to read the resources. Unfortunately, I feel like as a culture, we throw the baby out with the bathwater so too many times. And I know that comes from trauma. Some people are traumatized by, you know, certain aspects of certain religions and they have their own experiences. But I think you can, you know, try to keep your mind open and look at a lot of different cultures, resources on these things. You'll get a much broader knowledge base of them, a much better understanding of how they can be used so that you can make it your own. Read about what the overall intention of what the ceremony or the ritual is, and then figure out how you can do it yourself. If you like to sing, turn it into a song, you know, and if you're a writer, make it a poem or something, you know, that you read. I also would encourage to get, I like to buy used herbal medical books. I find them to be very helpful. A lot of them have really cool indexes that you can look up and you can find them used online a lot of the times, especially at the end of a school season. Honestly, I've always kind of been one to push the envelope a little bit. So I was totally fine with embracing the word witch, and I did it for a lot of things. I kind of don't mind it gets under some people's skin because it only bothers those who are narrow-minded, to be honest. But the other thing is I found that so many people still have to practice in silence and in hiding that it makes me sad, you know, that you can't just call yourself what you would like to be called, or people automatically think somehow it makes you evil or something like that, you know. And so for me, I was like, I kind of want to wear the label for those who can't, you know, who can't just openly say, this is my belief system. This is what I believe. It's unfortunate that the stigma still follows around. So yeah, I think green witchcraft is great. It's for me, I feel like it's one of the safer ones to dabble in because people can kind of hide under the herbalist umbrella. For those who have prying eyes and ignorant minds, you can just go by herbalist, you know, because really, honestly, that's what it is. Dive in and then you decide how you feel about it. You know, otherwise you may be missing out on some really important information that you couldn't have gotten somewhere else.
These are wonderful. Thank you. These are such wonderful resources. So obviously here we are in October. Can you speak to this time of year and its significance?
Oh, this is a great time of year for me. I think for a lot of us who practice witchcraft, it's big. And for a lot of cultures, the veil thinning. I know that's something that's common amongst just about every culture. For those unfamiliar, Halloween, All Hallows Eve, Samhain, is the longest night of the year. And it is believed that as you approach that night, the veil between the living and the dead just grows thinner and thinner and thinner, allowing a crossover ultimately. And for some people and some cultures, this was very scary. And so like Halloween, our traditions around Halloween was born because, you know, they were trying to scare off any spooky characters that were coming by dressing up like demons and goblins, you know, to kind of ward off any evil entities. Like if we're one of them, they're not going to bother us. Personally, for me, I find this to be one of the most spiritual times of the year. Now, while it can be spooky, and I like to stress that it's really good at this time to be like very grounded, but I love that. I love being able to channel my ancestors. That is what I spend my time doing. I like to do a lot of meditation and try and listen to any messages that may be coming through. And I personally think that this journey that I am on in witchcraft is very ancestral. I think that I was really meant to go through this path for the women in my family for healing. I am called to heal a lot of that damage that tends to be done through neglect or abuse. I mean, my family grew up very, very hard, and a lot of my brothers and sisters had a very hard and tragic life. And we need a lot of healing. What is the lessons that we're not learned that we need to learn now? We can relax a little, embrace the softer sides of ourselves. I think for a long time, the women in my family thought it was a weakness to portray any type of compassion or love or softness. And I spent so much of my life trying to make myself hard so I wouldn't be so sensitive that I thought of it as a weakness. And then it wasn't until later I learned it was a gift to be that sensitive and to be able to feel that deeply. These are the messages that I got from my work during like this time of year. And I also think those of us who are called to the craft, whichever green witch, sea witch, kitchen witch, whatever you want to call yourself, I think one of the reasons we were called to this is that we were supposed to bring this back to our own people in some way. And that's kind of this time of year. This is when you open yourself up to that type of messaging and gathering that power from your ancestors and honoring them. There's magic in the air in the fall. I truly believe that. It just hovers everywhere. It touches like everything. And it's unfortunate for those who can't feel or see it.
There's magic in the air in the fall. Oh, Serafina, there's magic in you. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing so much of you and your family and the magic and the work that you do.
So I appreciate you all having me. This is a blessing.
Serafina mentioned her use of juniper as a form of protection. The juniper tree has been used in this way in many cultures, including English, Scandinavian, Icelandic, Tibetan, and the indigenous people of the Americas. With a dense structure, sharp needle-like leaves, and thorny branches, the juniper tree grows across the northern hemisphere. In fact, it is Iceland's only native evergreen tree, as it is able to adapt to the harsh environment by growing low and shrub-like to handle the Arctic winds. Juniper berries have been used for various rituals for healing, fertility, cleansing, and defense. It was used in Central Europe for cleansing, particularly during the plague in the 1300s, to cast out diseases, and at that particular time, witchcraft. The oil of the berries have been used as an antiseptic and to detoxify the body, which aligns with the magical uses of purifying homes and fields and protection from harm. The idea of boundaries strikes me. So many of the Halloween rituals we celebrate today stem from a history of warding off evil spirits and protecting oneself from the scary, the other, the unknown, and misunderstood. Many rituals with the juniper tree work to keep people and things away, but there is also its ability for purification, cleansing, and healing. We also spoke with Joshua Gray, a self-described practitioner of the wild earth who walks in the space where the trees meet the open fields and who is relatively new to witchcraft. Both our guests in this episode speak about the beginning of their witchcraft journey as one based in healing. Let's listen. Hi, Josh. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today. It's a cold, kind of dreary Sunday morning, so I'm keeping myself cozy.
Oh, I love a good autumnal cozy day.
Yes, that's what I live for.
Can you describe how you became interested in or called to witchcraft?
When I was in ninth grade and I was not quite out of the closet yet, I had a girlfriend who was into witchcraft, but she was into Harry Potter, actually. And she brought me a book written by Oberon Zell Ravenheart called The Grimoire for the Apprentice Wizard. And for kids that want to have the Harry Potter experience, but with that sense of realism to it, I guess. But from there, I started learning about what it really meant. And finally, after 4 or 5 years of healing myself from past traumas that I've dealt with, it was like I got the calling again. And I was like, I'm just going to dive feet first into it and see where I can really go with this. And I've never looked back. I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly evolving what my craft looks like and how I practice it. So I still consider myself very new, despite the fact that I started 15, 16 years ago.
What does the practice of witchcraft mean to you? I know that's a very big question, but how would you, if someone knew nothing, what would you say to them?
As simply put as I can make it, I would say transformation, transformation of yourself, transformation of your surroundings and your situation, using your own personal energy and power, but also that of the things around you, correspondences, the trees and nature, the stars, whatever you can pull that energy from that's willing to work with you, and using that to transform everything.
That is absolutely beautiful, which kind of leads me to my next question. How does the idea of green witchcraft and the craft of the wild earth play into your role and your worldview?
I've always leaned towards the green craft, even when I first started, and plants and herbs have always wanted to surround myself with them, get real close and check out all the different details of, oh, this one's got this color berry or whatever. More recently, I am trying to work more with my ancestors, or maybe not even necessarily my ancestors, but ancestor work, spirit work, working with those who've been here long, long ago. And the wild earth was a large part of their practices and their religious beliefs. And at this point, I'm really just trying to draw from what I feel like they're teaching me.
That's fantastic. I do feel as though we've lost a bit of that connection.
At least for me, it's been a little bit difficult regaining that connection because everything is social media and work, sleep. And I was so caught up in that routine. So it's hard for me to just feel the sensations of what's around me and what I'm calling out to.
But I assume that it grows and becomes easier over time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. you find different methods, ways of channeling things, tools that'll help you.
What are some of your tools that make it easier for you?
My favorite plant in the whole wide world is mugwort. I use that for everything. And that's really helped me to focus my intention and channel those thoughts and sensations.
So what does your practice look like? What resources or guides are important to you?
I try to find most of the things I use in my practice outside when I'm walking. I like to use the things that I found in my yard, in the woods around me.
As we get into October, leading up to Halloween, what does this time of year mean or symbolize to you? And how do you mark this particular time?
The way I go about marking the arrival of October and Samhain season, it's not really anything spectacular or too different from what I do on a day-to-day, except the things that I would normally go out and pick from my yard that I'll use in my practice, I really go out and I really harvest them. Like it's winter's coming, it's not going to waste.
Harvesting is such a potent time. It really connects you with the rest of the year. So what advice would you give to others who may be inspired to lean into learning more about witchcraft? Where should they begin?
I would say start with reading and start with reading from different sources and use that to develop, cherry pick what sits right with you, get rid of what doesn't sit right with you, and use that to develop your own personal craft. And don't try to copy what someone else is doing.
That is such great advice, because I think so many of us feel that there is a way, a system, and it is only this, and we must follow a formula.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And, you know, they get so surprised when you tell them witchcraft isn't always Wicca, or that there's Christian witches or witches that don't believe in any kind of deity or even spirits, and they strictly work with their own energies. And so I think it's really important to figure out where you fit into all of that, and then just go from there.
Since this is tree speech, do you have a favorite tree or a story about a favorite tree?
I used to walk around in the middle of the night. I would just get up 1 a.m, just walk around the neighborhood. And I go down this side street that I've never walked down before. And at the very end, it opened up to a huge field. And in the middle was this big, beautiful weeping willow tree. But I spent a lot of nights underneath that willow tree, just trying to almost translate the sound of the wind rustling through its leaves into messages that I could understand.
That's so powerful, because it creates a whole separate space, a little separate environment, a separate world.
Yes. And then the tree itself, being a weeping willow, it's, you know, its leaves and its branches hang down. So once you get underneath there, it's even more secluded and even more quiet and easier to block everything else out.
Well, Josh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all of this. I really appreciate your time and I appreciate you sharing your story.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me. It was a good experience.
More about Joshua can be found on Instagram at sci.street.witch. It is easy to understand how Joshua found comfort and peace within the branches of the weeping willow. With flexible branches and long silver green leaves, this tree offers so much. Shade, protection, and the willow's bark and leaves have been used for tools and medicine by many populations. Dating all the way back to the 5th century BC, willow has been used for its anti-inflammatory, antiseptic, and soothing properties, which modern chemistry now explains is due to the salicin the tree contains, which is able to reduce the production of pain-inducing chemicals in the nerves. The willow is deeply tied to the element of water. Even its name comes from Celtic origins, meaning near the water. It makes sense, then, that the willow is linked to the lunar cycles and even female divinities. This could also be because it thrives in wet places, withstanding water and moist soil. One of the most potent symbols of the willow is its ability to adapt, to bend but not break. There is both softness in its flexibility, but strength in its tenacity. The willow has many magical uses. In Celtic practice, the besom, or the witch's broom, is traditionally made from three trees: ash for protection, birch to expel evil spirits, and finally, it is bound with willow to honor Hecate, the goddess associated with witchcraft. Serafina alludes to the need for witches to hide their practices. The persecution of witches began in the mid-1400s in Europe with the idea that witchcraft is connected with the work of the devil, and that women, as the weaker sex, were unable to fight the devil's influence. Women were also targeted because they were the midwives, the healers, the ones knowledgeable about the properties of plants and herbs, who used these earthly elements and thoughtful intentions to help people navigate the difficult spaces between life and death. Eventually, the targets widened to include outsiders, outcasts, and individuals who didn't socially fit in their communities, perhaps because of religious differences. Then even more were added: older women, those with skin diseases, and people with misunderstood illnesses such as epilepsy. Any person who looked or thought differently, and certainly any woman who didn't conform to societal norms. In the strongly devout Salem, Massachusetts, fear of the devil, factions and rivalries amongst the families, a recent smallpox epidemic, and the constant threat of attack from warring tribes created a tense environment, fertile land for suspicions, accusations, and panic. It began when, in 1692, after a very severe winter, several young women were afflicted with violent contortions and convulsions, severe fevers, and uncontrollable outbursts. The doctor, not knowing how to diagnose them, said that they were bewitched. The odd behavior of the afflicted individuals in Salem is explained today by scientists who cite rye ergot, a kind of fungus that forms on wheat and rye, staples of the diet at the time, as the cause of the symptoms, such as hallucinations, weakened immune system, and muscle spasms that made the afflicted individuals seem possessed. It's unfortunate that they did not turn to an herbalist or green witch, who would have been able to heal those suffering. By the 1600s, 50,000 individuals, 80% of which were female, had been killed for suspected witchcraft. In Salem, they were hung, but in other communities, they were burned at the stake in an effort to cleanse the soul of the accused. Depending on the context, a witch can be the broom-riding cultural archetype, a fun, fictional potion-brewing character, or simply an excuse to other a person. Witch can be an amalgamation of stereotypes and beliefs born out of medieval Europe and grown over centuries, used to scapegoat misfortune onto a person to dangerous ends. While simultaneously being one of the most popular costumes in America that people wear without fear of prejudice or harm. The label witch has been used to marginalize children
animals, women, and anyone who rejects societal norms of religion, gender, appearance, and culture. To take this one step further, some of the classic witch elements, especially the pointed hat and large nose, both derive from anti-Semitic stereotypes. Around 1215, European Jews were required to wear Judenhut, a cone-shaped hat, to identify themselves. In 1431, Hungarian legal codes required first-time sorcery offenders to walk in, quote, peaked Jewish caps. Imagined nighttime gatherings with the devil were even referred to as witches' synagogues.
The archetypical image of a witch is a mixture of biases used to justify the persecution of marginalized individuals and communities, and though the victims and cultural associations vary, the killing continues today. While Salem has done much to make amends for the actions of their past, the fear of witchcraft continues today in communities worldwide. According to one historian, between 1960 and 2000, 40,000 people had been killed for alleged witchcraft worldwide. It is brave to call oneself a witch, even today, and if there is anything that can be learned through the history of this holiday, it is the need and delight to be open to other ways of thinking, to seeing the world and celebrating the wonder of this life and the lives of those who have walked before us. Placing blame on others might create a sense of control in a complicated and seemingly random world, but it is driven by fear. Fear of anything that makes us uncomfortable. In fact, our fear of the unknown may be more destructive than any ghosts or goblins of the season. And maybe it's time to reframe the question, are you a good witch or a bad witch? To, are you a green witch or a tree witch? This week's episode was recorded in Massachusetts, on the native lands of the Wabanaki Confederacy, Penacook, Massachusetts, and Pawtucket people,
and in New York, on the native lands of the Lenape tribes,
and in Maryland, on the lands of the Piscataway peoples. Special thanks to Joshua Gray and Serafina Meza for sharing their stories today, and to Mill Riot for our special Halloween logo. To read our show notes or learn more about our guests and featured trees, please find us at treespeechpodcast.com or on Instagram at treespeechpodcast. If you've enjoyed our episodes, please like us on social media and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Tree Speech is produced and co-written by Jonathan Zoutner with the Light Theater Guild. We at Tree Speech wholeheartedly love this time of year. The colorful leaves, the crisp air, and of course, Halloween. From the goofy to the spooky and everything in between. This season, we are releasing episodes every other week, but because we love Halloween so much, we have a very special episode for you next week. Stay tuned, tree friends, and thank you for joining Tree Speech today.